documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, fortifying my cyber command and broadcasting live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours, along with Vicki Davis. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today is the 14th of January, 2017. I just about slipped back into the old 2016 thing, but we are here and we are examining this bizarre world that we're living in. You know, as we get deeper into 2017, I'm not really sure I like what I'm seeing so far. Honestly, we have had the Russian hacking meme. Now in more recent days, we've gone from Russian hacking or Russian hackers to Russian hookers. Now we have the a new lexicon has been introduced into the American vocabulary, and that would be the lexicon of, we have Watergate, that was the old thing, and then we had Climategate in more recent years, and now we have Urinegate. So, this is not starting off well, is my point. Anyway, Vicki, good morning.
Good morning, Darren.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not looking
good. I'm anxious to hear about the hackers to hookers.
Oh, you must not have been following the news.
No, I was working on actually still the hacking story, because what the hacking story really, it is a false story. The Russians had nothing to do with it, but
right.
What it did is text for Jay Johnson of Homescam Security to declare the election system as critical infrastructure.
Right.
And of course, you know, then what that means is that it comes under the control of Homescam Security, under the intelligence communities, and I've been taking clips, you know, watching all the hearings and taking clips, and the quote intelligence community that was the CIA, that was our international intelligence community. They have a domestic division now, so operating in the United States, and it is total information awareness.
Yeah.
And it will be total information control.
Yeah.
Tick.
Tick.
Total information control.
Well, it's
control.
Something to get ticked about, isn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me of that logo with the all-seeing eye at the top of the pyramid. You know, that's what the total information awareness logo was. And there, you know, we're seeing that play out everywhere. You know,
yes.
It's interesting that, you know, when Homeland Security first came along, they had a, I don't know if it was a patented logo, but we have it up on the sweetliberty.org website in the Homeland Security section, where it's a logo where, I mean, the eye, it's an animated eyeball that's just looking around everywhere. And my understanding is that came from the Department of Homeland Security people when they first invented this concept.
That wouldn't surprise me a bit, because that is what it is. I mean, it's started with the military, total domain awareness moved into total information awareness. And so now it really is total infrastructure and information control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we do have a centrally planned economy. They are the brain, if you will, of you know, providing information and information sharing that covers the full spectrum of our economy.
Right.
In the first hearing on Russian hacking, they talked. What's his name? Clapper.
Yeah.
Mentioned the 16 sectors, and then the Admiral Rogers. He echoed that 16 sectors. What those 16 sectors are the workforce development sectors that they are implementing in the schools for vocational training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what let me know that this really is the totally integrated system of information for control of our economy and our country.
Yeah, school to work. That was the
yes,
plan
exactly.
That Charlotte Iserbeet was fired for exposing, I guess, years ago when she was working for the Reagan administration. I'm looking at an article right now on Fox News. I'm very concerned, and I think, you know, we talked about this last week, about the fact that they could end up pulling off some sort of a false flag event. And what I've thought was that it would be in the early part of the Trump administration. I'm not even saying Trump would necessarily even be involved in it. He wouldn't even necessarily have to be. The people he has around him, namely a lot of these neocons, could end up pulling this stuff off without even his knowledge or permission. But the more I look at this inauguration, the more I'm thinking something could potentially happen. This has got me concerned. And here's the thing. Okay, Fox News is reporting, stages set for President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration. Not just traditional swearing-in platform on Capitol Hill, but a massive security presence amid protest plans to, quote, shut down, unquote, the nation's capital. Most crowd estimates for the January 20th festivities are far short of the record-setting 1.8 million visitors for Obama's historic 2009 inauguration, but the throngs of spectators and protesters alike are enough to create transit, security, and hospitality challenges. Now, what they're saying here, and Missouri GOP Senator Roy Blunt is saying, security is my greatest concern. No question that on inaugural day, this would be the most appealing target in the world. Now, he suggested that the city could have as many as 750,000 demonstrators alone. So I guess they're expecting, according to this Missouri GOP senator, they're expecting 750,000 protesters. That's not people to watch the inauguration. That's protesters. Now,
well, add to that 2,000 bikers for Trump or something like that. So, yeah, it could be the start of a civil war, actually.
Yeah, well, and that thought did cross my mind. But, ordinarily I'd say, all right, you know what? This is Washington, D.C. They're equipped to deal with this sort of thing. But something just dropped yesterday out of Zero Hedge, which they're citing the Washington Post, so I guess you could take it with a grain of salt since they seem to be a bastion of fake news these days. Not that they haven't always been, but it seems to be worse. But anyway, the Washington Post evidently is reporting this. They're the originating publication on it. D.C. National Guard chief fired days before Trump inauguration. The timing is extremely unusual. Now that's Zero Hedge's headline. It doesn't make sense to can the general in the middle of an active deployment, rages D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson, Democrat, after Major General Errol R. Schwartz, who heads the D.C. National Guard and is an integral part of the overseeing of the inauguration, has been ordered removed from command, effective January 20th at 12:01 p.m., just as Donald Trump is sworn in as president.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I'm smelling a rat here.
I'm not so sure that anybody from D.C. would want them involved in your security anyway? Honestly.
Well, I mean, this is the guy.
If you look at the history of DC law enforcement, the one episode that comes to mind was the murder of that girl that was blamed on a congressman.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the murder of that that attorney for the Clintons. And I don't know. I think it's a dangerous place.
Yeah, but why would you remove him on the day of the inauguration? This is a guy that helped plan security leading up to the event. And they're taking him out of his position right at the time that Trump is to be sworn in as president. Now, does that make any sense? January 20th at 12:01 p.m., this guy is to relinquish his command. That seems kind of odd, don't you think? I mean, the guy that oversaw security leading up to the event?
Well, what would make me nervous is that the same thing happened on 9/11. You remember how many new people were in position?
Yeah.
On 9/11?
The same thing happened, and I hate to bring this up, but the same thing happened at the assassination of John F. Kennedy. He had a Secret Service agent. Now, it wasn't quite the same thing, but he had a Secret Service agent whose post was to be running alongside the car there where he was. And you can see on the videotape that the man was obviously ordered to stand down because he's throwing up his hands in the video, in the film. And I don't know. This could be just some sort of a weird switching of the guard for some strange... But the timing is what really bothers me about this. And obviously it's bothering other people. Why would they do it at that time? I mean, if they wanted to relinquish, you know, get past the sensitive spot. But this is the guy. He knows all the critical areas. He helped plan the thing. And now he's being removed as the execution, and I don't mean to use that word, but I mean as the execution of the event takes place.
Was he removed or did he just resign?
No, he was removed. He's upset about it.
Huh.
Yeah, he's upset about it. They said that Major General Errol R. Schwartz, his departure will come in the midst of the presidential ceremony, classified as a national special security event, while thousands of his troops are deployed to help protect the nation's capital during an inauguration he has spent months helping to plan. The timing is extremely unusual, Schwartz said in an interview Friday morning, confirming a memo announcing his ouster that was obtained by the Washington Post. During the inauguration, Schwartz would command not only the members of the D.C. Guard, but also an additional 5,000 unarmed troops sent in from across the country to help. He also would oversee military air support protecting the nation's capital during the inauguration.
You said 5,000 unarmed troops?
Let me get back. Yeah, 5,000 unarmed troops sent in from across the country to help. That's what they said.
Holy cow. I'm surprised anybody would volunteer for that duty.
He also would oversee military air support protecting the nation's capital during the inauguration. See, this guy's instrumental, and he's being removed just as the event's underway. And he helped plan it. He helped plan it. I don't know why they would do this. And this is the thing that I'm really... It's got me worried. I don't know what they got up their sleeves. It doesn't smell right.
The 5,000 unarmed officers, that's very disturbing to me, because the protesters that are going to be there, they are radical communists.
Yeah,
they do kill people. They bomb things. I mean, that's everybody knows that. Nobody talks about it, but everybody knows that.
Yeah. Yeah, Schwartz says, my troops will be on the street He turned 65 in October, they said. He says, I'll see them off, but I won't be able to welcome them back to the armory. He said that he would never plan to leave a mission in the midst of a battle. Schwartz, who was appointed to head by the Guard by President George W. Bush in 2008, maintained the position through President Obama's two terms. He said his orders came from the Pentagon, but that he doesn't know who made the decision. D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson blasted the decision to remove Schwartz, especially on Inauguration Day. Quote, it doesn't make sense to can the general in the middle of an active deployment, unquote, Mendelson said. He added that Schwartz's sudden departure would be a long-term loss for the district. Quote, he's been really very good at working with the community, and my impression was that he was good for the Guard, unquote. I don't know if the Trump camp requested this or if something weird is going on. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt there's something weird going on, but is it something that is draconian? I don't know. It's just very odd.
I agree with you. I wish they would just, you know, cancel the outdoor festivities and just keep Bush protected inside.
You mean Trump?
Trump, yeah, that's what I meant, Trump. And just project the image, you know, like a big TV screen or something. Because it just doesn't seem safe. It's not going to be safe.
Yeah. Well, he said that, Schwartz has said that he has not been told why he was asked to step down. I'm a soldier, he said, noting that he was following orders and has no regrets. I'm a presidential appointee, therefore the president has the power to remove me. So there you go. Maybe it was Obama that did this. Maybe Obama's got some other little plan up his sleeve. Maybe all these conspiracy theorists out here who've been yelling about Obama staying in office, maybe they're right after all. I don't think so. I don't really think that's going to happen. I still maintain my traditional stance, but this does have me a little concerned.
Yeah, Obama wouldn't be able to stay in office anyway. It would be Pence. Pence would be...
Well, that's true. Well, if he declared martial law, but I think there would be enough pressure if he tried to act like a dictator or something, and there would be enough pushback that he would have no choice but to leave office. I don't think anybody would think he could get away with that.
Yeah, even if the new president and vice president were not sworn in, the job would fall to the Speaker of the House.
Right.
He's the next in line.
Mm-hmm.
So, Obama is out. That's it. January 20th, he's gone.
Yeah, well, Rosie O'Donnell, she's all in favor of imposing martial law. She just tweeted on the 11th, I guess it was, I fully support imposing martial law, delaying the inauguration until Trump is cleared of all charges. I don't think there was any charges. What charges?
There's no charges against Trump. What an idiot. Jeez. God, what? You know, those people in Hollywood, they should just shut up.
Well, they're incendiary. And this is part and parcel of everything. All the insanity that's being flown around and in the public discourse anymore. Nobody has any sense. It's just remarkable.
It's not.
You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that, you know, you were asking me about the hookers. I want to come back to that, I guess, since it's a big thing in the news right now. They came out with this 35-page, what they're calling a dossier. And this is a collection of supposed documents from intelligence, which basically is... It's mostly completely unsourced. I say mostly completely because there are a few mentions of names, but they checked into those names, and the people either deny having anything to do with it, or it has been factually checked out that they weren't even in the places where the document claims they were, In one case, there was a one of the people that were associated with Trump. The document claims he was in Prague, and it turns out not even to be the right guy. The point is that Trump held a... This is just more of the undermining of of the Trump administration before he even takes office. I've got some clips from his press conference. Trump's incoming press secretary was commenting, because the way this thing came about, evidently this has been flowing around in intelligence circles for a while, and no media outlet was going to publish it. There's evidence that it had been shopped around to various news organizations, and none of them wanted to touch it. Then CNN jumped on it and reported about the document's existence. And then after CNN reported about its existence, then BuzzFeed published the document in full. So anyway, this is Trump's incoming press secretary commenting on the BuzzFeed publishing of the dossier.
Before we start, I want to bring your attention to a few points on the report that was published in BuzzFeed last night. It's frankly outrageous and highly irresponsible for a left-wing blog that was openly hostile to the president-elect's campaign to drop highly salacious and flat-out false information on the internet just days before he takes the oath of office. According to BuzzFeed's own editor, there are some serious reasons to doubt the allegations in the report. The executive editor of the New York Times also dismissed the report by saying it was, quote, totally unsubstantiated, echoing the concerns that many other reporters expressed on the internet. The fact that BuzzFeed and CNN made the decision to run with this unsubstantiated claim is a sad and pathetic attempt to get clicks. The report is not an intelligence report, plain and simple. One issue that the report talked about was the relationship of three individuals associated with the campaign. These three individuals, Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen, and Carter Page. Carter Page is an individual who the president-elect does not know and was put on notice months ago by the campaign. Paul Manafort has adamantly denied any of this involvement, and Michael Cohen, who is said to have visited Prague in August and September, did not leave or enter the United States during this time. We asked him to produce his passport to confirm his whereabouts on the dates in question, and there was no doubt that he was not in Prague. In fact, Mr. Cohen has never been in Prague. For all the talk lately about fake news, this political witch hunt by some in the media is based on some of the most flimsy reporting, and it's frankly shameful and disgraceful.
Now, I should say that the report that he's referring to is this 35-page dossier, which purportedly came from intelligence. You know, it uses sources like source A, source B, source C, source D, you know, on up to source F, I think. You know, so it's largely unsourced. And what they basically are trying to say is that Trump was allowed to be put himself in a position where he could be controlled basically through blackmail by the Russians, and specifically Vladimir Putin. And they talk about him being in a hotel room with hookers, and they were giving him golden showers. I don't know if you know what that is, but you know, basically that's where I come back to Urinegate. It evidently something homosexuals like to do, I guess. And they're alleging that Trump enjoys this. So it's just absolutely, it's disgusting. It's completely unfounded. There's no basis, you know, no evidence, no proof that any of this is true. But this is how low we have gone in American politics now.
Yeah. Well, that's what I guess what happens when you're having in the middle of a communist revolution, you know. I suspect that this very same thing was going on over in Germany, you know, Nazi Germany.
Yeah, Trump alluded to that.
We are repeating history.
Yes, we are.
And but let me ask you this.
Sure.
There was one article that I saw that John McCain was connected with this dossier, wasn't he?
Funny that you should mention that. That was going to be my next clip.
Here's
John McCain confessing to it.
And after looking at that information, I took it to the FBI and have had no further involvement with the issue. And by the way, according to some media reports, they had already had that information, but I didn't know that at the time. I did what any citizen should do. I received sensitive information, and then I handed it over to the proper agency of government, and I had nothing else to do with the issue.
Why do you think they came to you?
I have no idea.
Do you find the information credible?
I don't know. That's why I gave it to the FBI. I don't know if it's credible or not, but the information I thought deserved to be delivered to the FBI, the appropriate agency of government.
Does it trouble you?
It doesn't trouble me because I don't know if it's accurate or not.
Okay. Does it make you worried that he is subject to blackmail by either Russians or others?
It doesn't bother me because I don't know if it's true or not true, because I have no way of corroborating that. The individual gave me the, made sure I received the information. I then looked at it. I decided it's a matter for the FBI and gave it to the FBI.
So there you go. He admitted that he's the one that gave it to the FBI. And I know that clip was kind of hard to hear because, he's in they're in the corridors of the Capitol building. But this guy is up to his eyeballs in this thing.
Yeah, well, I think he should say who gave it to him. I think that's important. Since the information is false and libelous, scurrilous, and they're trying to damage Trump's reputation with it, I think McCain ought to say who gave it to him.
Yeah, and BuzzFeed was careful to disclaim the thing when they published it, saying that there were problems and errors in it and things like this. So they weaseled out of having a lawsuit, but they knowingly published false information.
I'm not sure they can weasel out of it that easy, because it is salacious and damaging to Trump's reputation.
Yeah, it definitely is damaging to you. Absolutely. Well, that's a matter for a court to decide if Trump decided to go after them for it. I would love it if he did. Anyway, we got the bottom of the hour break.
A criminal court, not a civil court.
There definitely needs to be an investigation. We'll be back in a moment, folks. This is Govern America. Don't go away.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
News this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. New Jersey resident Dan Zhang faces serious criminal charges, but as a person of great wealth and immense privilege, he might be able to await trial in luxurious surroundings rather than in a cold and barren cell.
Zhang, a former Chinese diplomat, is accused of forcing Chinese immigrants to work on construction projects at Chinese government diplomatic facilities in the United States. Although he is presently being held in pretrial detention at Brooklyn's immense Metropolitan Detention Center, he has proposed paying $144,000 a month to retain a private security firm that would enforce pretrial detention at his two-story home in Livingston, New Jersey. Defense attorney Thomas Fitzpatrick recently told a federal judge that Zhang's family in China is willing to spend that money to get him out of the Metropolitan Detention Center. Zhang's family is both extravagantly wealthy and immensely influential, both in mainland communist China and with an America's ruling power elite. His uncle, Chinese billionaire Wang Wenliang, has drawn scrutiny over his large donations to American political campaigns and nonprofits like the Clinton Foundation, reports the Associated Press. If the judge agrees to his proposal, Zhang would join an elite list of privileged defendants allowed to live at home while awaiting trial. Some of them, including financial con man Bernie Madoff and Chinagate figure Ung Lap Sung, are also connected to Bill and Hillary Clinton. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. And the phone number, if you'd like to call in, is 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. And we already have a call on the line now, Vicki.
Okay.
Go ahead and take the call. And hello, caller. Who do we have here?
It's John.
Hey, John. How are you doing? Yeah, good morning.
I'm doing well. Hi, Vicki. Listen, I called in to talk about the inauguration, but before I do, I wanted to comment on the last thing that you were talking about. Just before you went to the break,
you're in gate.
Refresh my memory. What was it?
You're in gate.
This 35-page
dossier and the efforts to undermine Donald Trump. And here's the thing. I want to make it clear to the listeners, because I know people can be joining us off the street that maybe never heard the show before. I am not a massive supporter of Donald Trump. I want to make that clear. There are things that Donald Trump does that I scratch my head and say, I just don't understand what the heck he's thinking. That being said, it's difficult not to defend him when you see him being attacked every way but Sunday. And from his own party, from the intelligence agencies, from the news media, and some might say, well, he brings a lot of this on himself, but I just the ratcheting up of this unbelievable level of vitriol in the conversation these days, the guy's not even taken office yet. It's unbelievable. Anyway, go ahead, John.
Darren, I think what we're seeing, and this is the point I wanted to make, was we're looking at full-blown Ministry of Propaganda, thanks to the Smith Month Act being repealed. Yeah. These people, BuzzFeed, even McCain, although I think he's a snake, but BuzzFeed in particular may have no other choice than to publish these stories because these mainstream media, supposedly true news that we call fake news, are recognized by the government as credible news agencies, are under control because of the Smith Month Act. So they're propagandizing. They're doing what they're told to do.
Well,
now it's funny that you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it's interesting that you connected to Smith Munt because the Smith Munt repeal, because Smith Munt prevented the Broadcasting Board of Governors from propagandizing our own people. Now, of course, it was legal, and the whole purpose of the Broadcasting Board of Governors was to propagandize foreign countries. The idea was, though, is that they could turn that inward. And, you know, our domestic media has always been propagandizing us. But they're private entities.
But now it's legal.
Well, yeah. I mean, they can legal. It's the First Amendment. They can do whatever they want as long as, you know, they're still subject to, you know, libel laws and things like that. I mean, but
well, the propaganda it's the that government. They were given, Darren, to, the propaganda that they were giving was, you know, if you buy a bottle of specific beer, you're going to have a redhead, a girl with black hair and a blonde come save you from drowning. You know, you got to have this beer. But it's to the point now where the government is enlisting the news agencies and the broadcasters to propagandize the government's agenda to its own people. So, you know, that's just a touch on it. And then take into account that December 23rd, Obama actually signed into law the, you know, Ministry of Propaganda on how to deal with the so-called fake news agencies like RBN or like anyone that's trying to get the truth. Mm-hmm. The government's calling it fake news, and they gave a ministry to fight fake news. But to get back to the inauguration, because it's got me in trouble.
Yeah,
okay,
me too.
Obama, Darren, I don't know if you're aware, and Vicky, Obama's going to be out of the country on Inauguration Day. I'm there, 60 years old, for the first time in my life that I'm aware of a sitting president is not going to be in the States during the inauguration.
Now, see, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, he's going to be overseas brokering a peace deal between the Palestinians and Israel, but that meeting Israel's not attending. So he's conveniently out of the country.
Wait a minute. He's brokering a peace deal without one of the parties to the deal not even being there?
Right. Well, take into consideration, Darren, that you've got probably everyone in the House and Senate. You've got all of the federal judges appointed and otherwise, the Supreme Court, the president, the vice president, maybe Joe Biden if he's dumb enough to show up. Look, if something happens in D.C., and I pray that it doesn't, I don't want it to. But if something were to happen in D.C., if you remember in 2009, something flew by over the mall behind the Washington Monument. No one knew what it was. It wasn't very highly reported. But something got into the airspace of D.C. on Inauguration Day in 2009.
Well, did it?
So here we are.
9/11, too. The most protected airspace in the country.
Here we are in 8 years. 8 years later, he's going out. But he's also out of the country. So if something happens to D.C., and I mean our government, because it's all about continuity government, we know that they set Denver up to be the new D.C. if something ever happens. Something happens in D.C., we have no House, we have no Senate, we have no court, we have no successor, even if it were Trump. If Pence is gone too, and you don't have Pence, you don't have the Speaker of the House. You have no succession. You have no continuity except for this man who conveniently is in another nation. So when this dust settles, who's president, folks? I'm not saying this will happen. I pray that it doesn't. But I wouldn't put anything past it. And also this...
That's the worst-case scenario. That is the absolute worst case scenario. But I mean, unfortunately, given the times and given the coup d'etat that we're in right now, I mean, Vicky, we've been talking,
man.
You and I have been talking for years about this administrative coup d'etat.
Yeah, there's been a slow moving coup. So I track it back to 1990.
And I remember during the Iran-Contra hearings, what was the gentleman's name, the congressman who brought up the fact that...
Brooks.
Yeah, Brooks. He brought up the continuity of government, you know, plans that, you know, he was trying to ask Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North about, and he was shushed. He was shushed because he was worried that because he had seen it reported, even in the papers, he had seen some report about plans to suspend the Constitution. Now, I don't like bringing these things up on the show because I don't want to be a fearmonger. But when I start seeing people taking out of key positions and all of this weird stuff going on, it does kind of raise questions.
Well, what brought it to mind today? What brought it to mind today was this: the commander of the National Guard, when he said he would not be able to welcome, he would be able to watch them leave, but he would not be able to welcome them home.
Yeah,
that to me was. They may not come back. Not only will he not be there.
Well, I don't think he meant it that way. See, he's not happy that he's
being... I don't think he did either.
He's not happy that he's being taken out of his position. I mean, in the middle, does it make any sense? I mean, it's just like having a drill during the Boston Marathon. They were having a drill at the time of the Boston Marathon for a terrorist attack. Now, it seems to me like if you're going to have a drill... You'd have it before the event takes place, because at the time of the event, you want all your attention to be focused on security, not a drill. How does that make any sense?
Well,
I mean, from a logical standpoint.
Well, it doesn't.
It doesn't make sense militarily either. So, anyway, that's what I had, and I know, man, I'm a doom and gloom guy, not because I want to be. Because I believe, Darren, that I understand just what evil is capable of, and I think that these people are. I'm not gonna repeat it, but you know what I think they are, and they're capable of this kind of atrocities. Life is nothing to them. Sacrifice.
Oh, absolutely.
Human life is nothing to them.
Collateral damage. That's all it is.
Well, look at what was the. The former Secretary of State that said that, when she was asked about the Iraqi children's lives, she said, yeah, I think it was okay. You know, that's not her words, but that was her intent.
Yes, you're right.
Anyway, what's 750,000 protesters and another million that show up and 5,000 police officers and National Guard and FBI and Homeland Security
weapons.
And all the rest in D.C.? Right, and D.C. evaporates. Well, what is that? They want to destroy, they want the world population down anyway. They're just getting a head start. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, John, thanks for calling.
I think it's something we really do need to look at because they are capable.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There he is, John in Tennessee.
It makes sense that it would be the coming out party because Donald Trump really, to that side of the political spectrum, he is the Antichrist. And so, it's now or never for them. And so I just hope to hell our his security people behave as if, this could be D-Day, because it could be.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, his security people, my understanding is, that I remember hearing, reading, that he has his own private security people, too, in addition to the Secret Service, and that he insisted upon this. And if that's true... that just demonstrates that he's smart enough to realize how JFK was offed And he also realizes that the Secret Service was ordered to stand down. And I'm not disparaging the Secret Service, because I'm sure there are a lot of patriotic people working for the Secret Service. But the problem is that when you're in a position and you're given orders, you're expected to follow them. And that gentleman who was running alongside the Cadillac there, or the convertible with JFK, he didn't understand why he was being given that order, but he found out moments later, and I got a feeling he was pretty much given his orders to keep quiet about that, and we didn't find out about it until later.
Yeah, well, you know what? It only the way that it seems to me is that these people are kind of like moles, you know, that are embedded in an organization for a long time, and then they're activated, and it only takes a second or two, you know, to do something terrible. You know, it's like whoever gave the order to pull that Secret Service person off of JFK, you know, he was obviously a trusted person in the organization.
Well, and we don't even know. Maybe he was given an order to give the order. I mean, it could be a multi-layered thing.
Sure.
I don't know. But I don't like the smell of this whole thing. You know, Cynthia McFadden was on NBC, and she admitted that the intelligence officials say they don't believe the allegations in this dossier, and they call it political junk. Now, what's interesting is, This is blatant propaganda, what NBC is doing here and what Cynthia McFadden is doing. See if you can pick out what she says, that the lie in this clip.
The intelligence officials go further and say that as far as they are concerned, and I'm going to quote now, intel and law enforcement officials agree that none of the investigations have found any conclusive or direct link between Donald Trump and the Russian government, period. And so you might wonder, why was it part of this addendum if the intelligence community didn't believe it to be true, says it wasn't verified, as we've all said. And it was context. They wanted it available, we are told, so that if they felt they needed to explain to the president-elect the difference between vetted intelligence, i.e. the Russians did try to participate and influence our election, and this raw kind of disinformation that's out there. They had it available. In trying to explain to the president-elect, who has said continually, this is just political. Oh, we'll show you just political. This is the kind of political junk that's out there. Yeah. We don't believe it.
Now, did you catch it? Vicky?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I had my mic up and I was talking. But, she must think people are really stupid not to be able to see through what she just did there.
Well, she said vetted intelligence. To date,
well,
we have seen...
Well, and it's an insult to Trump, too. As if Trump can't understand the difference between rumors, you know, unverified rumors.
Well, she said she's referring to the dossier, and she said, you know, they wanted to explain the difference between vetted intelligence and this dossier. In other words, the Russian hacking thing is vetted intelligence. That's what she's saying here. This is a very subtle way of slipping it in, lying that the Russian hacking thing is vetted intelligence while this dossier isn't. Very clever what she's doing there. It is a subtle, very subtle, and I think deliberate, psychological operation.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Especially when the Russian hacking thing actually is not really vetted. That's one of the things that I found out is that the FBI did not do the forensics. It was done by a private company hired by the Democrats, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They hired a private security firm to do the forensics, and it's some foreign company called CrowdStrike. And I watched their little video about their company, and it kind of cracked me up that he said, we have gone around the world. We spent a year going around the world talking to various companies about their cybersecurity. Yeah, right. You know, as an IT person who was in the business for 20 years, what he is saying there is they went out on a mission looking at different systems and thinking about different systems, mm-hmm. you know, if he got actually people to talk to him. But for them to come back and actually design a virus scanning machine, basically what they have, as I understood it, is a keyboard logger. You know, they're logging keystrokes as they come in and getting into the system, and then probably doing a screen share so that they could see what's going on in the system. Hmm. So there, my impression of them as cybersecurity experts was that they are not.
Well, you're probably right then. BuzzFeed, despite now there was an interaction between Anderson Cooper and Kellyanne Conway, you know, and she basically ripped Anderson Cooper for putting out fake news and said that you know, they went first because they're denying it now. They're trying to, well, CNN is trying to weasel out of the fact that they were the ones that emboldened BuzzFeed to go ahead and publish this document. So I'll skip that clip, but despite his efforts to split hairs with Kellyanne Conway, she was right. It was CNN. In fact, BuzzFeed admitted basically that it was because that this document was already put out there that they went ahead and decided to publish it.
You talk about context and you talk about putting the responsibility on the readers, but at the same time, don't you have a responsibility of not spreading false information?
Now, this is Chuck Todd with Ben Smith, the publisher, the editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed.
Are you knowingly spreading false information?
I mean, I think as with the Obama birth certificate thing during the Obama campaign, this is an incredibly difficult balance that everybody in our business navigates every day.
But you're there not publishing a false... Claims. You're not publishing...
You're quoting people saying...
I understand, but
you're
did you publish a false birth certificate?
We certainly quoted the president of the elect of the United States making false claims about it. And years ago, we debated whether we should quote regular citizens in Iowa saying, you know, I don't believe his birth certificate. And I remember us thinking at first, we probably shouldn't, that we shouldn't pass that on. And then saying, you know what, this has become a force that is impacting the conversation. The information environment, fake news, are now these... There are factors in the conversation.
But haven't you just participated? I mean, look, the fake news thing has turned into this. You know,
I think different kinds of information.
Didn't you just do? And I'm sure I know this was not your intent. I've known you a long time. But you just published fake news.
We just published a dossier. No, I think that's a really...
Why is that not a... Why is that an unfair description?
I think people love to throw the term fake news around to diminish anything they don't like. But I think this was a real story about a real document that was really being passed around between the very top officials of this country. And then the question you say is, okay, it's okay for you, Chuck Todd, to see this document. It's okay for me to see it. Okay for John McCain. Okay for the CIA. Why is it not okay for your audience? Or why is it, like, which of your audience members are you comfortable showing it to? And I think when people are, as Harry Reid did, top officials are making, not just seeing it, making decisions based on it, it is appropriate to tell your audience and to respect the fact that they can say this looks like nonsense.
So
what a weasel.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He really is. So it's okay to report rumor if everybody's talking about the rumor, I guess is the argument that he's making. You know, this is the state of journalism today. Now, Trump took to the podium at his press conference, and he made some comments.
These meetings, as you know, are confidential, classified, so I'm not allowed to talk about what went on in a meeting. But we had many witnesses in that meeting, and I will say again, I think it's a disgrace that information would be let out. I saw the information, I read the information outside of that meeting. It's all fake news, it's phony stuff, it didn't happen, and it was gotten by opponents of ours, as you know, because you reported it and so did many of the other people. It was a group of opponents that got together, sick people, and they put that crap together. So I will tell you that not within the meeting, but outside of the meeting, somebody released it It should never have been, number one, shouldn't have even entered paper, but it should never have been released. But I read what was released, and I think it's a disgrace.
Okay, now, at this point in the press conference, to my utter amazement, he goes on to completely flip-flop on his position on the Russian hacking meme.
As far as hacking, I think it was Russia, but I think we also get hacked by other countries and other people. And I can say that, you know, when we lost 22 million names and everything else that was hacked recently, they didn't make a big deal out of that. That was something that was extraordinary. That was probably China. We have much hacking going on. And one of the things we're going to do, we have some of the greatest computer minds anywhere in the world that we've assembled. You saw just a sample of it 2 weeks ago up here where we had the six top people in the world. They were never in the same room together as a group. And we're going to put those minds together, and we're going to form a defense.
Why would he say that?
Okay, I'll tell you why. Because you, in order for a gambit to be successful, you know, the solution has to be, the problem and the solution have to be of equal magnitude. Okay, in the big picture of total information awareness and the system of systems, the Department of Home Scam Security is trying to take over absolutely everything in the name of being critical infrastructure. Okay, mm-hmm. When they first infrastructure system, it was because the Murrah building in Oklahoma City was blown up. Okay, so they started out with actual physical structures. This designation of our election system as critical infrastructure allows them to take over systems of government. You know, our state systems, the Constitution calls for our states to run the elections, set the rules for elections in their own states. Well, they needed some kind of major meme big enough to justify the government taking over voter registration rolls.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires you to look at things in a stovepiped way.
I'll tell you what, let's pick it up right there, because I think it's important, and we'll expand upon what you're saying here, because this dovetails nicely with your research on the Russian hacking, the election drilling it down article that you wrote, which we'll have in the show notes as well. Top of the hour, we're going to continue. We're really just kind of just getting started. Stay with us. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. We'll be back in a moment.
Govern America.
When just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, and it continues to be the 14th of January 2017, the last show before the big inauguration day and all that it entails. We're talking about cybersecurity today, and we're going to get into intermodal commerce zones and the highway system connected to that, and probably inland ports and all kinds of other things. But before the break, we've been talking about this situation with the smearing of Trump, the Russian hacking, alleged Russian hacking, because it isn't proven. We haven't to date seen any evidence that it's even happened, and yet they're going forward. And it looks to me like, and I'll let you weigh in on this, Vicki, but it looks to me like that Trump is walking back from some of his comments, earlier comments on the Russian thing.
Well, I would have to agree with that. But I mean, just in general, you could say, yeah, you know, maybe the Russians have hacked things. We know the communist Chinese have hacked things.
Yeah. Everybody hacks everybody. I mean, when it comes to countries.
Yeah, the issue is, well, yeah, right. Is it a country that's doing it? Is it their intelligence service? Because if you listen to John Brennan, they are, the intelligence services are linking up together as a collective on their own. Mm-hmm. And the reorganization of government is a horizontal relinking of the agencies of government and associations. Private sector associations are they are delinking from a national level to horizontal linking globally. Okay, so now they're asking us to believe that the Russians hacked our election system, and that's the reason why we need to, or why the Department of Home Scam Security needs to take control of our voter registration system. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you expand the picture, if you look only at the election system, you might say, yeah, gee, that might be a good idea because our election system is critical. But what is Home Scam Security doing? Home Scam Security is importing foreigners as fast as they can.
Absolutely.
They are the ones that are in control of DACA, which is legalizing illegal aliens. The Obama's Department of Education is having all children in school take a citizenship test. And what's that going to mean for the future? Does that mean that...
I'm surprised he's even doing that.
All illegal children, all children who are here illegally, are de facto citizens because they took the citizenship test. You know, there's all this stuff going on where home scam security and the intelligence network has basically turned on the American people. Globalization opened up our country for people and goods and everything to move across borders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our government services consolidated, and with the information system of systems, they are protecting themselves while they leave us like sheep in a meadow.
Yeah.
While they're herding in the wolves.
Yep. Boy, that's a good analogy. Hey, I'll tell you what, we have a call. I think this call is from Texas. Let's go ahead and take the call and see what's on this person's mind. Hello, who do we have here?
That's Mark in Texas. Good day to
you. Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Hi.
I'm doing good. How, Vicky? We got a... Huh? I've been thinking a lot about this administrative state. You know, it's been in effect for a while, and like Vicky says, it's just constantly expanding. It never stops. But here's the correlation. We've had where we control the cars, now they want to push self-driving cars. They want to push self-driving buses, self-driving railroads. Well, through the administrative branch, guys, what they have done, they have, for lack of a better term, they have created self-driving government.
Mm, I like that.
Good. Yeah, that's good. That
show
is
title.
Good. You're exactly right.
Show
Thank you.
But that's what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm writing that one down.
They've taken control out of our hands. They've taken control out of our hands and placed it into the thing that we're supposed to be riding in, you know, basically, for
lack
of a better
term.
Yeah,
and with self-driving car, what can we look forward to with the self-driving cars? Lots of wrecks.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
And I think that's going to be the case with self-driving government, too. What do you think, Vicky?
Well, yeah, because systems is built, it continues to expand and to incorporate connected systems. It continues to integrate other systems into itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with a beast that is controlling everything, and that is exactly what they are building. That's what Total Information, the system of systems, is all about.
Mm.
It is
and a
total
self-driving car. Self-driving car controls your speed limit, controls your every move. Anyway, I just thought that was a good comparison.
Go ahead.
They're doing this all in the
more by listening than I do talking. So I'm going to let you go for now. Okay.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Appreciate the call there.
You're welcome, guys. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Yeah, that was a great insight, and he's exactly right. But they're doing this all in the name of protecting us. Now, in the way we used to be protected, we had a circle of protection around our entire country. You know, we had the Air Force guarding our skies. We had Border Patrol, you know, guarding the borders. We had customs. One thing I read about privatization was that Reagan privatized customs, you know, at the airports and things. But once they signed up under the WTO, they eliminated all of that protection, you know, all of the external protection that protected the interior of the United States. And so now they are replacing that protection with information systems, surveillance and control systems, and they have intermingled the terrorists amongst us mm-hmm. to ensure that there is a demand for that kind of surveillance.
Yeah, in fact, the Homeland Security, or Home Scam Security, as you call it, just did something that... see, TechCrunch has the article. It's the NSA can now share unfiltered surveillance data with other intelligence agencies. So this is
And they will be sharing it with the private sector, because that was one of the there is a piece of legislation I need to read. But one of the things that they said in the hearing is that the Director of National Intelligence, which really is the government's IT department, mm-hmm. and it's global. It's not only, you know, the CIA international, it is the domestic Stasi.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to be sharing more of that information with the private sector, you see.
Yep. Interesting. So, well, we got another call on the line. Folks, by the way, you're welcome to join in if you want. 1-844-646-8376. Toll free, 1-844-6-GOVERN. Again, that's 1-844-646-8376. I believe this is Kentucky on the line. Hello, Kentucky. Who do we have here?
Hi, Dan in Kentucky. Hi, Darren. Hi, Vicky. Great show as always.
Thank you.
You know, there's a great quote: originality is returning to the origin of things. Mm-hmm. And I think Bob Chapman's comment to me years ago, and I think he said it on the National Intelligence Review, that the key is at the top, all the intelligence services work together. So when we're dealing with evil, which is what we have here, evil incarnate, that we need to always be on the defensive. So instead of reacting to the Russian scam story, it should come out, and Trump and other people on our side should focus on what the WikiLeaks revealed about Pizzagate, Podesta's emails, all kinds of things about draining the swamp, because it is always failed technique to defend yourself against evil. You have to be on the offensive against evil, and you have to use forced choices, and that's how the moles behind the scenes are forcing the idea of the self-running government that Mark was just talking about. Now, the other thing is, my father always said, everything important makes sense, figure out how. All of these things figure out how, because November 8th of this year will be the 100th day anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution in Leningrad, St. Petersburg. Now, thank God, it has its own name back. And they like 100-year anniversaries with the Federal Reserve and all kinds of things, and they're into numbers. So that's why they're pushing here. And I think the most important thing we have to do is to have a mindset of looking behind the scenes at to the original causes of what things mean, and how things make sense. I think how things make sense should always be our first question, not that they don't make sense.
Well, I don't...
I agree with you to the extent of looking behind the story, but I suspect that since it was the DNC hack that really started this whole thing, and the story was salacious, you know, with what Podesta supposedly is up to, I didn't look at that because I consider that Podesta is part of the gambit that they were running. That's why I went to look at Homeland Security, Home Scam Security, and the declaration of the election system as critical infrastructure. Okay, that designation of critical infrastructure becomes really important, that they are protecting as critical infrastructure under the control of Home Scam Security and the intelligence agencies in terms of information and surveillance systems. Okay, so it occurred to me, okay, we start out with buildings. They are critical infrastructure. They've gone to software systems now as critical infrastructure. It occurred to me that the designation of a monument under the 1906 Antiquities Act is equivalent to declaring the land critical infrastructure.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, so they are locking up control of absolutely everything.
Hmm.
And that's part of the bankruptcy of the U.S. and to take all that over. And the agenda behind that is evil world domination. So the more that people can focus on who's doing that and why, we can come up with offensive ways to reframe this, because people want the swamp drained, and I don't know how far Trump will follow through.
I can tell you right now, he's not.
I wouldn't even give him any clues.
Yeah, he's not draining the swamp. That's the problem.
No.
The people that he's surrounded himself with.
You've got to understand the swamp before you can drain it.
And I don't know that he does understand the swamp. You know, and that's the thing, is I conflict, because listening to the man, if you listen to the man, and maybe it's just his charisma, maybe I'm being drawn in by his charisma, I don't know. But he seems different in the sense that he believes what he says. And I get the sense... And I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. I get the sense that he wants to do something good, and that he intends to follow through on his promises. I think there's some evidence that he's trying to do that now with the Obamacare thing, with the building of the wall, which I thought was ridiculous when he said it. I thought, yeah, that's going to happen, sure. But he seems to be trying to follow through on his promises. Whether or not he's able to is a different story, but the fact that he's even seems to be trying indicates that he's sincere in his desire. And so I don't know, I just see this disconnect as to who he's putting around him. I just get the sense that he's being led.
Yeah.
That, well, he's being directed.
What? Yeah.
It is so easy.
People can be led.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it is so easy to expand the police state. All they have to do is few of their operatives carry out some kind of an event, you know, like Boston, or you know, any like Columbine. I know Columbine was a dialectic, or I'm going to start calling them gambits, because they really are gambits. And where they do something, and the objective is always, it always is the expansion of this total information and control system.
Mm-hmm.
There is always a system, always money for a system, or the implementation of a system behind it. Every damn time. Yep. For the whole 13 years that I've been looking at this, it has been every time.
Yeah. Dan,
because that's the agenda. Yeah. That's the agenda. Yeah. That is the system. They need the system. They need the system to suck everybody dry because they're a parasitic system. And if they didn't set up all this infrastructure control, they would be out of business tomorrow. That's why the commercial you had at the first break, Darren, mentioned a couple Chinese guy and Bernie Madoff who are in, country club prisons.
Hmm. Was that the news thing?
Yeah, it was your first break.
They mentioned a couple Chinese guys and Bernie Madoff. They're trying to get this Chinese billionaire who's in New Jersey in a federal corrections place to try to get him to be in prison at home.
Yeah, I missed that because I was, I use those breaks to get coffee.
I know. Yeah, but that's an example of, you know, the money guys, you know, the bag men need to be taken care of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, right. But if you actually threw a couple of executives, even you know, world class billionaires, into a prison like Folsom Prison, or I bet you that they would, the rest of the executives would figure out that it's not worth it, because what white collar criminals, the reason what keeps white collar people in line is the very idea of going into a place like that, into a prison like that. But if you can allow people to buy their way out of it, then it's a completely lawless world. Because white collar criminals,
that's why Iceland's a good example. Iceland, they're putting people in jail. We need more of that.
Yeah.
Yes. In real jail, not luxury jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there are things that could be done. For example, I read something, you know, you could print up a few gold coins and call them $1 trillion coins and say, here's the national debt, it's paid off. You could declare the Federal Reserve illegal. You know, there's lots of things Trump could do by Twitter, but we'll see what he does.
Well, I think anything Trump does at this point is going to cause major financial disruption, which I could see that being a part of the plan. Because at some point, you know as well as I do, fiat monetary systems don't last forever. And the fact that we have around a $20 trillion national debt, you know, I mean, once you get above, you know, a few trillion, I mean, there's no point in even talking about it anymore. These people are not even paying attention to the spending. I mean, you know, ceilings, debt ceilings, and this and that and the other. I told my wife, I said, listen, I think we need to raise our debt ceiling. You know, I'd like to be able to spend more. You know, I mean, this doesn't work with your personal finances. I haven't figured out how to make that work yet.
Well,
we do government that way all the time. Go ahead, Vicky.
You know what, though? The United States has financed economic development all around the world. So why are we in such debt? It was because they signed up with the WTO and trying to get all these world trading system in the global trading system. So I don't consider it legitimate debt for the United States.
No, it's not. Nothing's legitimate.
It's not.
When the whole monetary system is phony. Yeah. When the whole monetary system
is illegal, and that's why it could be paid off with legal tender coins, $1 trillion gold, legal tender coins. The gold would be worth, like, what is it, $1,200 an ounce, you know, big deal, you know. But it could be, because that's the kind of ledger domain that they use to come up with legal justification. So I'm just using what they do against them, that's all. Because the Federal Reserve is unconstitutional, and so are other things. But, you know, Sun Tzu wrote the book on the art of war, and his kingdom in China was eventually conquered. So it's good ideas, but if you add sincerity to that, which, you know, you said Trump sounds sincere, he does in a lot of ways, but if he's good at surprising in deal making, then he could come out of left field and do things that they don't expect offensively against evil. That's what I hope happens across the board, because I think that's what we need. And great show as always. I'll let you all go.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll talk to you later.
God bless you all.
God bless you too. All right. Anyway, moving along here. I wanted to get back. There was a warning that Schumer issued, and this is why where I was going with that situation earlier, Vicky, with Trump walking back some of his comments about Russia, because he came out in the press conference, and I probably have the clip somewhere in my stack of stuff here, but he came out and said something like, "I would like to be able to get along with Russia, you know, and I probably won't. But I would like to be able to." I mean, he's making these statements that, well, more than likely I'm not going to be able to get along with them, but I think it would be nice if I could. You know, yeah. So.
Well, you know, they have to have the illusion of the foreign enemy out there, because yeah. It's the foreign enemy that provides justification for the internal security systems that are imprisoning us.
Well, I'm wondering if this isn't a case of, you know, explaining his flip-flop on this, because this was a big issue, and he just flipped on it. Chuck Schumer, a week ago, was on with Rachel Maddow.
This is the latest statement, latest tweet, as you were just saying, the president-elect's latest yeah. unsolicited pronouncement on the intelligence community. This was his tweet just a little while ago tonight. You see the scare quotes there. The yeah. intelligence briefing yeah. on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday. Perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. We're actually told, intelligence sources tell NBC News, since this tweet has been posted, that actually this intelligence briefing for the president-elect was always planned for Friday. It hasn't been delayed. Look. But he's taking these shots, this antagonism, yep. is taunting to the intelligence community.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think of that?
Was that the shot across
the bow?
Yeah, it is. But Chucky Schumer is a criminal, and he has probably a lot of dirt in his closet.
Well, they all do.
Well, not like Chucky Schumer. Trust me on that one. No, I looked and saw what he was doing. He's actually involved in the critical infrastructure, you know, for the inland port networks. He facilitated one of the foreigners in investing in our country, and these foreigners are the ones that are providing funding for the hardware that is installed, that is connected to the surveillance infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know if I made that clear to you or not, but Chuck Schumer is dirty.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Well, I don't doubt that one bit. I mean, everybody, I've heard people talk about being around him, and they said that he's a sleazebag. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that have met him. So, anyway, I want to go to the January 5th hearing on cybersecurity, which was held in the Senate Armed Services Committee, because John McCain and James Clapper basically admitted they had nothing in terms of evidence of the Russian impact upon the U.S. elections. And I think this is important, and I know you wrote about it.
October 7th, the Homeland Security and Office of Director of National Intelligence, their assessment was that U.S. intelligence community is confident that the Russian government directed the recent compromise of emails from U.S. persons and institutions, including from U.S. political organizations. Goes on to say these thefts and disclosures are intended to interfere with U.S. election process. Quote, such activity is not new to Moscow. Russians have used similar tactics and techniques across Europe and Eurasia. Quote, based on the scope and sensitivity of these efforts, not only Russia's senior most officials could have authorized these activities. General Clapper, those are still operable and correct statements?
Yes, Chairman McCain, they are. As I indicated in my statement, we stand
actually more resolutely on the strength of that statement that we made on the 7th of October.
I thank you. And so really what we're talking about is if they succeeded in changing the results of an election, which none of us believe they were, that would have to constitute an attack on the United States of America because of the effects if they had succeeded.
Okay, that's if. Very important to keep that in mind. Tell you what, we're at the bottom of the hour.
But he believes they did.
Well, he believes, and believes doesn't prove. Tell you what, bottom of the hour, we'll continue this on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. Our website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. And Vicki's website is thetechnocratictyranny.com. Again, that's thetechnocratictyranny.com. And if you'd like to call in, phone number is 1-844-646-8376. Toll free, 1-844-6-GOVERN. Again, that's 844-646-8376. And the chat room is open. There's a few people in there. Chat.governamerica.com. That's chat.governamerica.com. And somebody, Murr Bailey, in the chat room dropped the link to Vicky's latest piece on the Russian hacking thing into the chat room. So I appreciate that. And also, I get this email from Jason. He says the real reason for the Russians hack the election fake news story was to declare the election as vital infrastructure controlled by Homeland Security, so Homeland Security will now have free access to hack all future elections, like they tried to do 10 times in Georgia during this past election. I had forgotten about that story. So many things have happened. Homeland Security, they did try to hack. It wasn't just Georgia either. There was another state involved too, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant when I said whenever these things occur, we have to look at the broader context, the bigger picture. Because in the bigger picture of things, home scam security is facilitating open borders. They are facilitating the slow-moving occupation of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't care what they say at this point about protecting Americans on anything. I don't believe them.
Yeah, I don't believe them either. Well, it's obvious.
They are using it as justification to implement police state surveillance systems on the American people. And as far as I'm concerned, that's un-American activities. And if Donald Trump is going to drain the swamp, he needs to start with home scam security.
Well, there's a completely worthless department that needs to be done away with altogether. You know, I mean, you talk about bureaucracy. There is absolutely zero need for a Department of Homeland Security. We didn't have it prior to 9/11, this false flag event, and we don't need it now.
I'll tell you why they have it. The reason why they have it is because an IT system is a master controller system of whatever process it is that your information system is managing. Mm-hmm. They are always management systems. Okay, and the IT system has to be above. Okay, now when I say that, what I'm looking at are the relationships. You can't have relationships that are on the same level in a hierarchy controlling another one on the same level in the hierarchy. The control always has to be one level above. Mm-hmm. And since the IT systems are controlling everything, the 16 sectors of our economy, which include all business and government activities in our country, you have to sit above all of those things. because it is managing all of those things, mm-hmm. you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ultimately, when they are linking up horizontally, the intelligence communities linking up with the intelligence communities in other countries sharing information.
Yeah, it's control, ultimately going to be a global.
The control moves up to another level, a higher level, which is global.
Yeah, and that gets right back to what you were writing about. I want to discuss that because that's very important. They are elevating cyber security, cyber command. I want to get to that, today because that's really important. Got a couple of calls on the line. Let's go ahead and go to Missouri. I think this call is from Missouri. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, Sam calling.
Hey, Sam. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Well, you know, the one thing that's come to my mind that is interesting for all this talk about Russian hacking and everything. Who was it that wanted the UN to oversee our elections here not too long ago?
I'm drawing
that was
blank.
Obama, right? Or Hillary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that
yeah.
was okay.
Sure, yeah. Because in the color revolutions, that's how it works. I found one paper that was analyzing color revolutions, and they've already discerned that there is a pattern to them. And what this paper was attempting to do was to determine what the differences were when the color revolution was successful and when it was not.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting that you're looking at this as a color revolution, too, because I hadn't really thought of it that way until you said it. But I think we're having our own purple revolution here, and the reason why I say purple, that's what Hillary Clinton's been wearing, and Bill Clinton wore his tie, and they were purple. And in that other meeting the other day, Elizabeth Warren, very close to the Clintons, and she was wearing purple as well. So I think that's the color that they've chosen for this, and we could very well be under this. This could be their revolution. It's a silent.
Well, you know
it's not
what?
A declared
you know
one, but are any of them declared?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is on my old website I have a web page called The Color Purple, and the reason I do is because Thomas Barnett. I don't know if you remember him, but he was a military strategist, and I kept picking up a lot of things about the color purple, but in particular, what he said is that in joint command, if you want to be a flag officer, you've got to be purple. Okay, and that was joint command.
Interesting.
And, yeah, and when you follow the thinking, you see, cyber command was created under the joint command, okay? Mm-hmm. And what you just said about pulling out cyber command and making it its own unified command, which will operate at the global level because it's not attached to a region, they are breaking it out from under the control of joint command.
Yeah, which basically means that we have a global cyber security operation.
Okay, now let me tell you
about
like
how it seems like a subtle shift, you know, just
yeah,
a reorganization.
Well, it is, and almost nobody would pick it up if they're not military and looking at the command structure. But the reason why I started looking at command structure is because in 1992 when George Bush what he did was he stood down SAC, which was our Strategic Air Command that protected the airspace over the United States. He dismantled SAC, and he created STRATCOM, Strategic Command. Strategic Command became Joint Command when they put the different branches of the military under Strategic Command, and that's when they created Joint Command under the color of purple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sam, I didn't want to leave you in the dust there. Go ahead with your with your points.
No, that was fine. I just wanted to throw that in there because I've been thinking a lot about that over the past week and a half. As this stuff kept coming out, and I'm thinking, you know, people have got to somehow wrap their minds around this stuff. But see, the problem is most people are so busy and just living for the day that a news story that might have come across yesterday is a faint memory, even though it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we need to keep in mind. I mean, you know, the UN is every bit as foreign as the Russian government and is every bit as corrupt and every bit as communist. But, you use these people when they're convenient for you, and then you use them as a scapegoat when it's convenient for you as well. I mean, they talk out of both sides of their mouth, and so I just wanted to bring that up because it was not too long ago. Remember, because all this stuff about Strong Cities Network,
oh, yeah,
all this kind of stuff, and then now suddenly we're going to turn right around. And we're going to make this big stink about the Russians hacking into our electoral process and all this kind of stuff. And, ye speak with forked tongue is what I would have to say to those people, because it wasn't too long ago where supposedly the UN was going to supposedly oversee our elections to cut down on fraud and all this kind of stuff, which I didn't believe when they said it, but it's just the idea that it's interesting how they will throw that out there when it's convenient and make it sound like a positive to the average non-thinking individual, and then turn right around and come up with this deal with the Russians hacking the elections. And I'm thinking, well, what do you think the UN might even decide to do? You know.
Well, yeah. You know, and you mentioned the Strong Cities Network. There's some more on that front that I have later on, if we get to it, because Loretta Lynch is doing some really nasty stuff, and with these consent decrees, and I was looking into that some last night too. Vicki, I think you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that all the media propaganda and things like, you know, the UN trying to get involved in our elections, overseeing our elections, this is all highly scientifically, strategically planned. They do plant memes in people's minds, and they do long-term strategic planning, and they do know the objective. And as it gets closer to the time of when they are ready to do something, you know, like to nationalize the voter registration database, they do start planting these stories, and they create media hype about it. And in a person's mind, you know, while they may not have been paying attention, you know, 3 months ago or 6 months ago when it first came up, their mind remembers it even if they don't consciously remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I've had the experience, you know, where something will happen and it causes a nagging feeling, you know, there's something I remember about that, but I'm not remembering it, and then it'll come to me, boom.
Well, the nice thing about the internet, you know, back in the day, we weren't able to dig up those things from the past that we remembered or thought we remembered. Now we can go back and just, it seems like I remember something about this, and type in a few words, and boom, there it is. So, I mean, this is the problem I think they have, is that they can't put that genie back in the bottle quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why they're trying to do the whole fake news thing, is to try to control the flow of information that they've, I think, inadvertently let get out.
Yeah, well, one paper that I was reading called it the Battle of Narratives.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah, I did too. Fits perfectly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Sam?
Yeah, well, the thing with this whole thing is, with this fake news thing, is that latest thing I've been seeing in some articles now is that now that this fake news thing has been kind of turned back on the mainstream media, now they kind of like to bury it. And it's interesting how that whole thing works.
Yeah,
too.
It's kind of funny how that is, isn't it? They started the meme. They started the meme, and all of a sudden, the whole thing is, you know, their credibility. The more they call everybody else fake news, the more their credibility is destroyed. That's what's hilarious about it.
Well, except what's going to happen though, is that because functioning at the administrative layer of government, and that generally is not in the news anyway, they can still pressure the states to, you know, regardless of what we say in the media, in the battle of narratives, they can still pressure the states to turn over their voter registration database and put it up in the cloud where they can manage all of them.
Yeah.
Supposedly to protect them.
Yeah.
And then the states become
it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the states become just simply users of the data. They input the data, but they don't control the data.
Yep. And that's there's no question that that's the plan. They pretty much said that.
because Jay Johnson, I read a presidential decision directive or something, and and Jay Johnson has been working with the Association of the Secretaries of State.
Yeah, and I got that audio. Where he's at the breakfast given by the Christian Science Monitor.
Yes, yes.
I clipped that, so we'll play that in a little bit. Sam, did you have anything else?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate you, man. God bless you.
All right.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
We'll talk later. All right. There he is, Sam in Missouri. And let's go to now Canada, I believe. And hello, Canada. Who do we have here?
Hello. Hi, it's Nick in Alberta.
Hey, Nick.
You know, I find it interesting. I'm glad Vicky's on because I've been wondering about this for a long time. I learned years ago not to discount. No matter how crazy somebody sounds, don't discount what they say because we really don't know. And then too many times it turns out to be true. This is woman, I stumbled across an interview with her about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. And she claims that she's being kidnapped, or not kidnapped, but taken to heaven. And she's speaking directly with God. And he's giving her instructions as to what to do. Come down here and give us, I guess, messages or something.
Who's she? Who are we talking about?
I can't remember what her name was or any. It was just this when she said this, it stunned me. And you know, when you get stunned like that, everything else goes blank. And she said, when she got taken for about the third or fourth time, she was a little bit tired of it. She said, "Okay, I got a question." And okay, you can ask your question. And she's apparently speaking directly to God. And she said, "Who are you?" And God said to her, "I am not a living being. I am a system. And my only function is to replicate."
Hmm. Holy cow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, my God.
I thought Vicky would have a very interesting take on that one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do. On several levels, actually.
It would be interesting to know who, if you could remember the name of the person.
I'm going to search and see if I could find with this interview. I don't know if it was on YouTube or radio. I was so stunned when I heard that. Everything else went blank. I'm going to look for it.
Yeah, I can relate to that. That's really very interesting. And also, I have a story that I could tell about something that happened to me, but it would sound too crazy, and so I just don't tell people.
Yeah, that's why.
But it doesn't involve anything with my mind or, you know, anybody talking to me, because that's never happened. Well.
I'm detecting you're a little conflicted.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah, a little conflicted, but
well, I'm not going to think you're crazy.
In the last, you know, decades, I'll say. But yeah, there are things that happen that you really can't talk about, because if you do, you sound like you're nuts.
Well, I struggle sometimes with the false flags, you know, and trying to investigate the symbolism and things like that, because I think, man, you know, people must really think, you know, I'm going off the rails with some of this. But I just know, you know, even though there's a lot of people out there that may be atheists, there's a lot of people out there that may not believe in even in a higher being, let alone God or Christ or anybody, you know, specifically. I mean, the other side believes, there's evidence the other side plans things, organizes things, and they're very much involved in the occult. I mean, that's, I think, can be documented. I mean, we document it here. So, anyway, Nick, I'll give you the last word there.
I'm done. If I could find this quickly. No, I can't.
Well, I'll tell you what. Email it to us, radio@governamerica.com, if you find a link, and we'll include it in the show notes.
Oh, here it is right here. This is real quick right here, this one here. This is something that everybody can use, because everybody is, all of our rights are being violated, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yes. In the United States, you have a law. It's called Conspiracy Against Rights. And I think that everybody should start filing these charges. It's U.S. Code Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 13, Subsection 241. And it goes into details about what happens to you if you violate people's rights. And holy cow, if you start filing charges against these people, I think they'll cave real quick.
Okay, 18.
Can you give me that title again? It was 18, Part 1.
18, yes, USC, Part 1, Chapter what?
Chapter 13, Subsection 241.
241,
it's called,
okay.
Conspiracy Against Rights. And boy, I'll tell you, read that. And people should be jumping on this and just filing charges against their governors and senators and judges and prosecutors and cops and everybody else who's violating your rights.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I have volumes of information about how our rights are being violated. All of these systems, once government breached the walls, partnered up with corporations and breached the walls of government and started implementing surveillance and control technology in our infrastructure and on our homes with the smart meter and you know, I have a list of systems that I've worked on that I've documented. They did enter into a conspiracy against our rights.
Well, I find the second paragraph very interesting. I'll just read the first line of it here, because the cops are supposed to be peace officers, and they're impersonating peace officers is what they're doing. And it says, if two or more persons go in disguise on the highway, you see, and that's what they're doing. They're in disguise on the highway, violating our rights. So
that's
is a
interesting.
Very interesting,
you know,
law, and you can just don't ask anybody to charge them. Do it yourself. Just charge them.
Yeah, the Department of Home Scam Security is in charge of law enforcement training. They are the ones that are responsible for this post-training that is turning our cops into killers.
Well, that's right, and it goes into it. What happens if you kill people, kidnap people, sexual assault, you know, things like that. You know, it's a very short law. It's only like 1, 2, 3 paragraphs. And, boy, you can get the death penalty for this. If death occurs, like Lavoie-Fenacombe, and God only knows how many murders have taken place by these people, but nobody knows about the law, so, you know, nobody's filing charges. And if you go, let's say you go to the sheriff or the cop or anybody to file these charges, and they say no, what you do is you add their name to, now they're part of the conspiracy. And you just keep going, and you file the charges right into the court. If the judge says, no, I'm not going to, then you put his name on it, you appeal that, and what little people know
is that 97% of things like this that are appealed are won. That first judge, he's just a blocker. He blocks you and gets you to give up. But the appeals court, when they see that last judge's name now added to it, I don't think they want their name added to it. Because this, they're facing jail time. Just file the charges. Get as many people out there filing this charge as possible, and they can't stop it, and they'll all end up in jail. They'll shut the Homeland Security down, charge the head of Homeland Security and everybody who works under him. Just file charges against them, and then get your militias to go and arrest them if the sheriff won't do it.
Yeah.
They can't win if they don't show up for court, and they won't, because they can't defend themselves. They lose automatically. Now you got a warrant for their arrest.
Yeah, well.
I love you, Canada. That is just
I wish I could
awesome.
Do it myself. We don't have such a law.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, Nick, I appreciate
it. Some other callers get in.
All right, thanks. Appreciate the call. We're at the top of the hour. All right, Vicki, one more hour to go here, and we'll have to hit the ground running in the next hour. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. Hour number three, straight ahead.
Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is hour number 3 of Govern America. It continues to be the 14th of January 2017 as we are getting further into the year, and Vicki Davis is here. Channelingreality.com is one of her websites, the older website, and there's thetechnocratictyranny.com as well. The Technocratic Tyranny. Check out all of her research. And also, by the way, I forgot to mention, and I should mention, TVOINews.com as well. That's the voice of Idaho, TVOI News. And on TVOI News, the voice of Idaho, check out her Russian Hacking the Election Drilling Down. That's very important. Vicki, earlier I mentioned, I don't know if you have any comments, but I was going to talk about the Jay Johnson breakfast given by the Christian Science Monitor, where he basically laid out the plan. I got the audio from that. I don't know if you want me to play that, or did you have some other direction you wanted
sure.
to go?
No, that's fine. Go ahead and play that. That's an important one, because it occurred before the election.
Didn't you say it was back in August?
Yeah, it was in August. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah.
So this plan, and when I traced it all the way back, it does go back to a plan in progress, the Help America Vote Act.
Yes.
Of 2002.
Yeah, we talked about that. That was coming out of the 2000 election fiasco. If our listeners recall, when George W. Bush was running against Al Gore.
The Chad nonsense.
Yeah, the Chad, the hanging Chads, swinging Chads. The Florida nonsense where they were recounting the votes and examining punch cards with magnifying glasses. And basically kept the whole country hanging in limbo, wondering what the outcome was going to be, like some kind of suspense thriller. Well, they had an agenda back then as well, and that was the Help America Vote Act.
Yeah, that is something I'd meant to say before when we were talking about color revolutions, is that the pattern of the color revolutions is that they always are about the elections, about elections. And
good point.
Yeah, and in most cases, the successful ones ultimately end up with a new constitution. And I suspect that the new constitution harmonizes the country's basic contract with the people at the global level. And I suspect that the con that they've been trying to get done will do just that. It will be a rewrite of our constitution to harmonize it at the global level. And you know Patrick Wood, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, Patrick Wood found that the first time that a constitutional convention was mentioned, it was mentioned by Zbigniew Brzezinski. And Zbig, of course, has been on in
that was
on
Carter's
this,
for, Secretary of National Security.
National Security
Advisor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and he wrote a book called "The Between Two Ages," and
Grand Chessboard too, right?
Yeah, and I think one called "The Technocratic Era," but I'm not really sure. But anyways, Zbig is a he's a systems analyst just like I am, and so he is aware of systems and the development of systems, and he has been involved. You know, he's a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Oh yeah,
and he has been involved in building this global technocratic system from the beginning. You know, before anybody was even. Before most people in this country were even aware of computer systems,
mm-hmm.
what a computer was, let alone what it could do.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a major player. There's no question about it. And so is Jay Johnson, maybe not to the level that that Zbigniew is, but
yeah.
Jay Johnson knew what his marching orders were going to be. Again, this is, I took out all the, I didn't change anything he said, but I took out all of his pauses because basically I turned a 7-minute clip into about a 2.5-minute clip because this guy, he takes his time to say what he's trying to say.
Now, on the election process, we are actively thinking about election cybersecurity right now. Now, the issue with the election process is, as you know, there's no one federal election system. There are some 9,000 jurisdictions across this country involved in the election process. So when there's a national election for president, there are some 9,000 jurisdictions that participate and contribute to collecting votes, tallying votes, and reporting votes. States, cities, counties, who all have their own way of doing business, down to the nature of the ballots, the nature of how votes are collected and tabulated. So after the 2000 election, with Congress passed HAVA, and there was a commission created by HAVA that was dedicated at the national level to the security around the election processes across the country. That commission actually, I think, did a lot of good and raised the bar quite significantly, but there is more to do. The nature of cyber threats has evolved since 2002, since 2003. And so I do think that we should carefully consider whether our election system, our election process, is critical infrastructure, like the financial sector, like the power grid. The election process contributes to, there is a vital national interest in our election process. So I do think we need to consider whether it should be considered by my department and others critical infrastructure, which has several implications in it. It becomes very much part of our focus. There are some short-term, long-term things I think that we should do to bolster the cybersecurity around the election process. I am considering communicating with election officials across the country about best practices in the short term. There are some best practices that exist, and I think we need to share those best practices with state and local election officials soon. And then I think that there are probably longer-term investments we need to make in the cybersecurity of our election process. I think that there are various different points in the process that we have to be concerned about. So this is something that we're very focused on right at the moment.
So he pretty much laid it all out there, what they plan to do prior to this whole thing materializing.
Exactly. That's. I mean, it pretty much proves that the DNC hack, which started the whole
national
meme. Yeah.
False
yeah,
flag.
It was a gambit run by the Democrats.
Incredible. So.
And the FBI went along with it. See, that having the FBI under the Department of Homeland Scam Security is what is allowing them to get away with all of this criminal activity, because they control the FBI. The FBI is not an independent law enforcement agency. They can't investigate the hand that feeds them, so to speak.
Well, I don't know.
Although Comey said he reports to the Attorney General, but the Attorney General is as involved in home scam security as is the Director of Home Scam Security, because every change to a government system requires a change in law.
Yeah.
Well, that's why our government has basically been taken over by lawyers.
Well, there's no question about that. And, you know, you mentioned the Attorney General. I wanted to, since you're on the subject, you know, Sam, or one of the callers, mentioned the Strong Cities Network. I think it was Sam. And Loretta Lynch has been making her rounds. And I think this is really important. You know, the Strong Cities Network, they are internationalizing our cities, and they are in the process right now of federalizing our local police. And I think it's very important to see, you know, some of the things that have been going on with the police brutality. You know, as well as I do, you call it gambits. Basically, I call it the Hegelian dialectic. These false flag operations, you know, police brutality certainly is real. And we've seen it. We've seen an acceleration of police brutality. In the past, we haven't seen it reported, though, very much. Now, in recent days, we've seen it all over the place in the media. And so I think there's a reason for that. And I think with these incidents of police brutality, high profile, and the rioting that's taken place, you know, here you have Loretta Lynch entering into consent decrees with cities to basically pull the Department of Homeland Security and the Justice Department into your town and pitch her tent. And that's exactly what they've done. Here's Loretta Lynch making at a press conference in Chicago.
And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern of practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them.
Okay, so they're going to be entering into a consent decree, working with the federal government, and there you have it. Now, that
was
yesterday. Go
ahead.
Yeah.
What they do, apparently, when they go after police in local police departments, they do it in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
So when they take it over, it
yeah, she had her civil rights officer standing right there. In fact, she spoke at the press conference.
Yes. Okay, now, about a year ago or so, there was a White House conference on combating domestic terrorism. And I have a clip of that on my YouTube channel. What they're doing is when they take over a management of a police department, that's when Muslims actually are inserted into the police department under the community policing program. they'll have an incident, and what they do is they say what? And the what?
You cut out there.
Huh?
You cut out there.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Okay, well, that's when they insert Muslims into the police departments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in combating terrorism, and this was connected to the Strong Cities initiative, by the way, and community policing. And so, what the Civil Rights Commission does is they take a look at the makeup of the police department, and they add Muslims into the police department under the community policing model because they say they have to have the trust of the community to combat terrorism. Well, what they're doing is injecting terrorism into our law enforcement layers of government.
Mm. That's very important. Yeah,
it is hugely important.
It is consistent with everything else they've done. Now, that was Chicago. That was yesterday. Okay. Now, as I said, she's been busy because she also, the day before, was in Baltimore doing exactly the same thing.
Over 227 pages, it lays out ways Baltimore police must reform its policing. The consent decree between the city and Justice Department lays out 15 areas of reform, including community policing. The topic of a speech by the nation's attorney general where West Side community organizers listened.
Community policing is lacking in West Baltimore, and it's something you want to see.
Well, it's definitely not there yet.
I am confident that this reform package will create a stronger and a safer city.
Lynch spoke at the University of Baltimore tonight after standing alongside Mayor Pugh this morning to announce the agreement. It will require police adhere to the U.S. Constitution when making stops, searches, and arrests, build on the department's recently changed use of force policies while mandating officers focus on de-escalation, and prohibit officers from using a person's mere presence in a high area of crime as a basis for a stop. One of the key factors in why police stopped Freddie Gray.
The city and BPD will implement comprehensive reforms to end the legacy of Baltimore's zero-tolerance policing.
The decree seeks the changes after a Justice Department August report outlined discriminatory and unconstitutional policing that affected mostly African Americans while disregarding reports of sexual assault and retaliating against people exercising free speech.
Today is a revolution in policing in Baltimore that we hope will be remembered.
The consent decree also requires the city to create a community oversight task force to increase civilian oversight of the department. The next step, a public hearing, which will be followed by the appointment of an independent monitor to oversee its implementation. City officials haven't yet attached a price tag to any of this.
Okay, so it's interesting that they use the word revolution. Certainly, it is a revolution. But I hearing about this, Vicki, I wanted to learn more about these consent decrees. You know, I did a little research on this because since they're talking about it, I think this is important. I don't think this gets enough airplay. I don't think enough people are talking about these consent decrees. And so I found a video by Senator Jeff Sessions I wanted to share with you.
Consent decrees are not often discussed in the public domain, but a consent decree is a powerful act that's anti-democratic in so many different ways. It occurs when a representative of a state body for example, agrees to bind future governors, future legislatures, override state law, override state constitutions for indefinite periods of time. It should not be taken lightly. But these decrees, once entered, are very, very difficult to change. Now, it's one thing if a private corporation agrees to fund for 20 years this or that program as a part of a settlement of a lawsuit. But when an attorney general or a governor or some other state official agrees as part of a lawsuit to do something over many years in the future, they are binding the people of the state, the people of the United States. They're binding the legislatures of that state and future governors. This is a matter of real constitutional importance.
I also came across a professor, Mike DeBow, who is with the Cumberland Law School, and he had a very interesting explanation.
A consent decree is simply a document that ends a lawsuit by way of settlement. There are consent decrees entered in any number of lawsuits every day. They're very common occurrences. Most lawsuits settle, and a lot of them have written decrees that set out the terms of the settlement. The type of consent decree we're concerned about in the paper, though, is a consent decree used in a kind of litigation called institutional reform litigation. These were lawsuits that began to be brought in the mid and late 1960s by different sort of activist groups that were trying to, say, reform prison, the management of prisons or the management of mental health facilities. There are hundreds of these decrees that have been entered around the country with regard to prisons, with regard to schools, with regard to environmental protection, with regard to services to low-income or mentally handicapped populations, consent decrees about state governments and Medicaid and the Social Security Act. So the consent decrees we looked at were the ones that confine the state government's ability to set policy and conduct the business of state agencies and subject that to the continuing oversight of a federal judge and the group of litigants who brought the case initially. Sometimes these last for years. They're set up to work essentially indefinitely. And so they can be a very expensive and time-consuming and hamstringing restriction on the ability of the state government to function.
I think this is exactly what Loretta Lynch is doing to our cities. What do you think?
That is exactly what they're doing. And the program that I watched on C-SPAN, the White House Summit, that was in February of 2015, and it went on for 3 days. And the city that was the target was Minneapolis.
Mm.
Okay. And if you anybody that wants to know what this is about, what I was talking about, just go watch that summit. Watch the C-SPAN programs on that summit. And you'll see it, you'll hear it.
Yeah, if you can find it and send it to me, I'll put it in the show notes.
You bet I
will. Trying to include everything we can to make it a resource.
I wrote an article about it somewhere, but I can't find it. But I do have a couple of clips from it on my YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I wrote about it because I was pretty horrified at what they were doing, actually.
Yeah, I haven't really heard very many people talk about these consent decrees. Have you?
I just heard it mentioned. I was watching the Judicial Watch channel, and there was a panel discussion that Judicial Watch was doing, and one of the members of the panel mentioned it. I'll send you the link to that too, because that is probably one of the best programs on what they're anticipating the first 100 days of the Trump administration will be, or what they would like it to be.
What's that?
And it was produced by Judicial Watch.
What they're anticipating Trump is going to do?
Yeah, the changes that he's going to make. And one of the things that they talked about were these consent decrees.
But getting rid of them, hopefully?
Well, yeah. And okay. And moving the prosecution of police out of the Civil Rights Division of the Attorney General's office.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. Mm-hmm. Well, and how much of this is actually going to come to fruition? You see, I mean, that's... it's interesting that this stuff is being talked about. In fact, some of the stuff that's being talked about that I wouldn't have ever figured a public official, especially the president, or in this case, president-elect, would ever even broach. You know, case in point, he just appointed, what was the guy's name now? It escapes me at the moment. But a vaccine, you know, basically RFK, he just appointed Robert Kennedy Jr., who was a vaccine skeptic, for lack of a better way of saying it, to basically oversee the vaccine safety office, or whatever they call it. And this guy he's not in favor of the adjuvants that they are using in vaccines, in particularly the mercury.
I think because Trump has a son who has autism, or may be partially autistic.
I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah, so he's really on the vaccine subject.
Well, I think that's great. You know, I mean, and that speaks well for him. So there are some things that he's doing that I think do speak well for him. I just think he's being railroaded a certain direction, and to whatever degree, he doesn't really control his own policy. And we've been saying that for years in patriot circles, that presidents don't really control their own policies.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like they're giving him a few bones, and you know, the meat of the agenda will continue to roll on, because it always does.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to get back to your document. Last week we started talking about the interstate commerce and the fact that, you know, we were discussing Harry Reid's treatment of the Bundys, the financial interests Harry Reid had. There were BLM documents, which you wrote about, and, you know, you referenced the Jack Yantis case, and we were discussing how a lot of the allegations that the federal government has against all of these people were basically boilerplate objections that they have. And you mentioned that that there was a golf course nearby the Bundy property, which put basically the whole area into an intermodal commerce zone. And that was really how got started with it. Go ahead.
It's not really the golf course per se, but I look at patterns. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what I do. And the pattern seems to be that the inland port/workforce development area, it includes a golf course nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And why that is, I can't tell you, but it's a part of the pattern. Okay, but the only thing I can think of really is that it's close to an airport, and what can you put close to an airport that, you know, wouldn't make people crazy? Well, a golf course is not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. You know, because golfers are only out there for a little while, so they stand around and wait for the airplane to land or take off, and then continue their game.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
That's why I mentioned that, because they were together there.
I want to pick it up when we come back from the break. You wrote about the $400,000 grant by the Walton Family Foundation, and basically the EPA extortion of corporations to achieve its goals. So let's pick it up there when we come back, okay? Folks, you're listening to Govern America, visiting with Vicki Davis, thetechnocratictyranny.com. We'll be back in a moment. All All right, we're back. This is Govern America, visiting with Vicki Davis, thetechnocratictyranny.com, thetechnocratictyranny.com. Check out all of her writings. Also, tvoinews.com, the voice of Idaho, tvoinews.com. Vicki, I don't know, did you want to comment on this $400,000 grant by the Walton Family Foundation?
Yeah, that's part of an extortion racket that was set up during the Clinton administration. Carol Browner, who was the director
EPA?
Of
EPA,
the EPA administrator, I guess they call her. But anyway, she openly admitted that she set up an extortion racket with corporations. And it wasn't a direct, there wasn't a direct relationship between what the corporation wanted to do and where the money that was extorted from them would go.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Carol Browner also was a member of the Socialist International as well, right?
Yes. Yep. If you do a search on Carol Browner and Socialist International, you'll find the connection.
Now, the you said that there was a new transportation policy that was basically authorized in the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 1991.
Uh-huh.
Yes. What was the significance of that?
It was a new paradigm in transportation, supposedly. And it was the same kind of deal for the transportation system as the smart grid is for the electric system. It was putting a layer of technology over existing infrastructure.
You know, I think that part of the reason why we have this shift away from broadcast media, you know, television, everything, the spectrum is being taken over by other providers like cell phone companies. I think, you know, there's an FCC reverse auction and forward auction going on right now. They're auctioning off the spectrum from the TV providers, TV stations, and auctioning it forward to the cell phone providers. Now, that's not going very well because the cell phone providers don't want to pay for the spectrum that they claim they wanted to begin with. But I think part of the reason why this is going on is because of this smart highway system in place. The cars and all of this stuff that's going to be connected on our transportation systems, Vicki, is going to require an awful lot of spectrum, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah, because everything, the whole emergency responders, you know, they require spectrum and you know, there's...
Well, they're talking about making it bridges and the self-driving cars and trucks. I mean, if you just imagine everything on the highway, every vehicle on the highway having its own IP address, for instance, you know, and all these things... Go ahead.
And every device transmitting a signal within a frequency. I mean, we're talking about water meters that transmit your water usage and smart meters that transmit your electric. Although what they're doing, ultimately what they will do is have the smart meter communicate. I mean, the water meter that has RF transmission capability, it'll communicate with your smart meter, and the smart meter will then communicate with the nearest tower. But yeah, all these devices, the Internet of Things, they all will a space on a frequency so that they are identifiable. I mean, you know, that's getting into an area that I'm a little hazy on. I mean, I understand how it all works.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's okay. I mean, because it is, but it is relevant because, okay, if anybody thinks that these meters are not going to be reporting on you This surveillance is not going to be used against you. All you have to do is look at that murder trial that's going on right now, where a guy is being accused of committing an act of murder, and the data from his smart water meter is being they're wanting to use that to as evidence that he used so many gallons of water. There was a spike in his water use, and they're claiming that he used it to wash away blood of his victim, alleged victim. So already we're seeing this kind of stuff emerge as potential evidence in trials and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. And the data that they get from your smart meter on your electric usage. I mean, they can analyze the patterns of your usage and know exactly what you're doing, you know, at any given point in time in your house by which device you have switched on. Because each device, every device, has a signature, the amount of electricity that it draws and the frequency that it draws or you know, whatever. MIT discovered that each electrical device has a signature. And so the whole smart grid system was built on the discovery of that signature. Okay, so they can tell what you're doing in your house, you know, when you flip on a light switch in the bathroom. You know, they'll know how long you've been in the bathroom. And, you know, ultimately when all these systems are connected, if you're in there too long, you know, they'll send a little note to your doctor saying, hey, this guy's got a problem, you know.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I remember hearing about the fact that the cops had actually raided some guy's house based upon his electrical smart meter. They believed that he was growing marijuana, and it turns out he just had a lot of computer systems that was, causing the extra draw. But they were thinking that it was marijuana lamps, you know, heat lamps for plants and that sort of thing. So, I mean, this is just the beginning, and I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we have to look forward to, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know, those are just the hanging fruit of what they'll be able to do.
Yeah.
They will control absolutely everything. Your children and your grandchildren in the future won't even have the choice of career that they want. They will be guided and directed into what the requirements are of the state, of the corporations who are partnered with government. You know, if they have a requirement for 1,000 plumbers, and your kid who would have been a brain surgeon if he had his choice of careers will be guided towards being a plumber because that's what's required.
Yeah,
you know,
it's the old communist model.
The requirements for the government and corporations.
Yeah, it's really no difference.
I mean, it's so horrendous.
Yeah.
You know, that that's what drives me. That has always been. People are going to be locked into an electronic prison. It's an electronic prison without bars.
Yeah.
But they won't even know they're in a prison. But their whole lives will be directed. Everything will be directed for them.
Well, I think of the words of, who was it that wrote Brave
Am New? I still here?
Yeah, you're still here. Did I lose you?
Darren, I can't hear you.
Here we go again. I don't know why let me disconnect. And we'll redo it. Hopefully we can reconnect with Vicky. Well, I don't know why. I can't seem to be reconnecting with her now. Okay. Well, folks.
Hello.
Yes, you're there. Can you hear me?
Wow, that's weird. Yeah, I didn't even hear Skype ringing.
Yeah, it's interesting because I reconnected. I could, you know, like usual, I couldn't. I could hear you just fine, but you couldn't hear me.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting how these things happen. And we, by the way, folks, we are exploring some alternatives to Skype. We'll just we'll keep you posted as we learn more and attempt to do this. But anyway, so the planning and construction of international transportation systems, you talk about them being centered around hubs, telecommunications, and IT, hubs being ports. Did you have anything you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, the 1990 transportation plan, the objective was to, at least when it was announced in 1990, the objective was to overlay technology onto our existing transportation infrastructure and to make it an integrated system. Well, by 1992, they had the strategic plan. And first, there was legislation, 1991, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act, which was designed around the idea of transportation hubs, which later turn out to be ports and inland ports. And it's at the transportation hubs where the communications hubs are located. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the communications hubs turn out to be the fusion centers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you could say that really what they designed was the network. The surveillance and control network began with the transportation plan in 1990.
Yeah, and we talked about before the principles of admiralty law coming into play. You write about the 1990 National Transportation System Design, you know, and the right of innocent passage, you know, suggesting that, you know, like on admiralty, flagged vessels may not be denied innocent passage. You know, I was thinking about that when I was reading your piece. This whole issue of net neutrality. I wonder if that has anything to do with net neutrality, because they're talking about packets not being restricted in any way. And, you know, network managers have always managed their networks. And to do that, sometimes you have to restrict certain traffic if it's causing a problem with the rest of the network. You know, so I'm wondering if net neutrality has anything to do with this whole concept of right of innocent passage?
Well, it sure could, because the whole networked system of information systems and surveillance systems laid over the top of our transportation system, and it being an international system, because it crosses the borders, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, by definition, it's an international system. It certainly could fall under admiralty law.
Yeah. Now, on the concept of transshipment from one vessel to another, not included or not excluded by words navigable to and from the sea, did you have anything that you wanted to say on that?
Yeah, in 1921, the Barcelona Declaration had to do with international commerce and crossing landlocked states, So what the problem was is that landlocked countries couldn't really participate in international commerce because they didn't have a seaport. And so what they did was to extend a shipping lane through a landlocked country by defining inland ports, what you could call an inland port.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transshipment zone where two or more forms of transportation come together involved in international commerce. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, they brought Admiralty law onshore.
So they drug it from the maritime arena to the land arena.
Right. And okay, in 1995, when Mexico announced their economic development plan, which included the communist Chinese funding two deep-sea ocean ports in southern Mexico, and then establishing a system of five inland ports coming up north through Mexico and coming into the United States, across the border into the United States, ending up at the Kansas City Smart Port, they were bringing international law because the law follows the vessel. Okay, so if you ship something from Shanghai and it went through a Mexican port and the destination was Chicago, say for example, and it passes through a transshipment zone in Mexico, going from a vessel, a ship, to a train or a truck, it's still under international commerce until it reaches its destination.
Interesting. Well, this is a way that they can bypass local law and federal law and,
yes,
and put the entire country basically under international law. Isn't that correct?
Well,
you think that's the goal?
Well, ultimately, the goal is to put the entire country under international law. But what this legislation did, the Intermodal Commerce Zone legislation, and making it an international highway system, did was to allow our country to be penetrated by foreign transportation or foreign shippers and intermodal commerce zones. And if you've done any research at all, you find out that it's connected with the EB-5 visas. And so you have foreign direct investment in our countries that just coincidentally happens to occur at the site of these zones. So what you end up with is a foreign beachhead in our country under international law.
Yeah, and to the listeners that don't understand the EB-5 visa program, that's the one where it allows foreigners to spend $500,000 or $1 million, depending upon the area, to literally buy their way into the country. This is really one of the most draconian types of deals that I've ever seen, because foreign spies, you know, can, if they want to get into the country, if they got money, evidently will extend them a visa.
Yeah, they can just buy that. They can buy their citizenship.
Yeah, permanent residency anyway, which later they can apply for citizenship.
Yeah, and that money from the EB-5 visa goes to local officials. I mean, it's a system designed
for corruption. Exactly, and it has a lot of it. And we've played congressional hearing clips on this broadcast where they were talking about the corruption. And to my knowledge, I don't think they've really ever even done anything about that. The whole program should be rescinded and done away.
Well, they haven't done anything about it because they're benefiting from it. You know, we have people go into Congress and they're just, you know, average wealth for a middle-class person, and they end up being millionaires. How does that happen? They don't, you know, their salary, their federal salary, is not enough to create a millionaire. You know, when these guys are maintaining two homes, one in Washington, D.C., and one in their home state.
Yep.
Although some of them actually do move there, but still, Washington, D.C., the couple hundred thousand a year that they're paid as a congressman, you can't live and make yourself a millionaire on that kind of money.
Right. So we spent a lot of time on this broadcast today talking about the election systems and how Homeland Security is wanting to put that under critical infrastructure. And of course, to whatever degree that the election systems are connected to the internet, that would make it maritime, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes, under international law, yeah.
So,
because the design, you remember the design of the Trans-Texas Corridor,
mm-hmm.
it had everything going in a line all there together.
Right.
Pipelines, railroads, fiber optic cable, the highway system, the bus lane, you know, anything that moves in a straight line was included and connected to transportation in any way whatsoever. Was included in the design.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be something like 5 football fields wide or something like that.
Right. And when you look at the systems, the port security systems, turns out that they're of course involved in the fusion centers. They are the fusion centers. And there is a World Customs Organization. That's one of the requirements for setting up a foreign trade zone, which is connected to these inland ports. It is a global system.
I wonder if the Law of the Sea treaty, you know, comes into play here, because if all of America is being placed under admiralty, or at least being penetrated by admiralty, certainly, it seems like there would be some kind of connection with the Law of the Sea. Have you?
It does, and I've thought I should really look at that, but I have not done that.
Yeah. Because I know it governs the territorial waters of the United States. Well, every country, really. I mean, a certain number of miles off your coast is considered your waters. And see, the Law of the Sea Treaty, as I understand it, basically, it outlines what can be mined and who can mine it. And so, I don't know, it'd be kind of an interesting study to find out exactly where that comes into play. Now, you also write about Booz Allen Hamilton and their role in designing tech for ports and corridors. Did you want to comment on that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Booz Allen Hamilton designed the systems at the ports, and I think I included a diagram on that, didn't I, showing the various systems, because the systems include not just highway but also the hospitals, because the hospitals, the emergency rooms, are part of the transportation system, which I really didn't know. And so are the emergency 911 systems, ambulance systems. They were all put into place as a result of highway legislation.
And the
requirement was to have an emergency room trauma center close to a highway off-ramp, you know, because back in the old days, you know, the old than there are now, but so you wouldn't really think about it, but that's how the hospitals and the healthcare system get dragged into the whole transportation system, and you can see how they've taken over our healthcare system. It's kind of like the tail wagging the dog in that instance.
Yeah, we're going to have to revisit all this later, because I mean, but Elaine Chao, apparently a big proponent of this, and she's going to help move this along under the new Trump administration.
Right. Well, Elaine Chao's family was involved in shipping. You know, he was trained. They're Chinese nationals that moved to Taiwan before the revolution, I might add, but during the revolution, or yeah, I'm not sure exactly when they moved over here, but she was in elementary school, I guess, But anyway, her father came over here and started a shipping company. And when she grew up, after she graduated college, she became a White House fellow. I think Reagan appointed her as a White House fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to work for Walter Wriston and Citibank. That's a very interesting connection. People should really read her background.
All right, check out thetechnocratictyranny.com. Vicki, we'll do it again.
We never have enough time.
I know. There's too much going on. Anyway, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless you, folks. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.